When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Is my kid really going to make $200 million playing professional baseball? Or am I trying to create a scenario where my son or daughter is going to foster a lifelong relationship that's healthy with physical activity, have coaches that teach them to carry themselves in a professional way that's going to serve them, whether they're a baseball player or an accountant, lawyer, whatever it is that they decide to do?
This is the Reform Sports Project, a podcast about restoring healthy balance and perspective in all areas of sport through education and advocacy. Hi, this is Nick Bonacore from the Reform Sports Project podcast. My guest today is Eric Cressy, Director of Player Health and Performance for the New York Yankees and President and Co-Founder of Cressy Sports Performance. A highly sought-after performance coach, accomplished author, and world-class powerlifter, Eric trains athletes of all levels, from youth sports to professional ranks. Specializing in applied kinesiology and biometrics, Eric and I discuss the appropriate time for kids to start weightlifting, how parents can help their children learn the value of healthy eating, and the importance of letting kids learn to fail at a young age. Man, I got another awesome guest. He is someone I've been chasing around a little bit. I've been following his work for some time. Guy is, you know, elite in his field, highly respected, one of the best in the country, probably in the world as well. Co-founder, president of Cressy Sports Performance, and also director of player health and performance for the New York Yankees. I'm pumped to have him, Eric Cressy. Cress, thanks so much for hopping on, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Here's where I want to start with you. This is a major, I know you're obviously a baseball guy, but you also tackle all youth sports. You work with athletes at all ages, so we're going to get into that. But I played for Mike Fox at North Carolina Wesleyan College before he went on to coach in University of North Carolina for 20 plus years. Love the guy, mentor, just an amazing human. I've interviewed him several times. We have a great relationship. But he gave me a quote a couple of years back. He specifically talked about youth baseball and what he had seen over the years. And we can get into why and all this. But he basically said he is seeing so much of kids playing baseball year round. So many games, almost like borderline big league slash minor league schedules. And by the time they get to college, or even beforehand, they're having Tommy John. I want to ask you, overuse, throwing too much, all of these things, year-round play, is that what's causing these kids to have Tommy John before they even get to high school, or even shortly thereafter getting into college?
Yeah, it's a big problem. I think it's multifactorial. The first thing is, through my role at the Yankees and also just, you know, kind of my involvement in the private sector, like, there's no such thing as a normal 18-year-old elbow anymore. Like, we see these at the MLB draft. We see them as we look with kids, you know, who have injuries, things like that during their teenage years, is that kids are throwing so hard and so much at young age now that they're structurally changing the way that they work. And what's very, very interesting is when you hear about Tommy John surgery, what's being reconstructed is the ulnar collateral ligament. So basically a small ligament on the inside of the elbow that basically is the keys to the kingdom with respect to laying your arm back to throw a baseball. And we look at these 24, 25-year-old professional players who are throwing 98 miles an hour and go and have Tommy John. What the surgeons are actually seeing on these ligaments when they're in the surgical room is areas of calcification. So what they're seeing is these kids had low-grade injuries when they were younger that became kind of just points of defects where the ligaments weren't quite as strong. And then what happened is they got bigger, they got stronger, maybe they got a little bit more mechanically efficient and learned to throw harder. And all of a sudden, the stress was enough that that ligament just went. So we're seeing the guys that actually do blow out in the teenage years. And then we're also seeing the guys that blow out substantially later, you know, when eventually the straw breaks the camel's back. So it's a scary thing where sports medicine really hasn't been able to, you know, to keep up with it. We're seeing kids that are maladapting at very young ages. And there aren't a whole lot of parallels across sports medicine. Like, you don't see this in ACLs with soccer players, right? Maybe you see some structural changes in hips and in hockey players, but most of them are asymptomatic. We're seeing some elbows that are unfortunately somewhat irreparably damaged early on to the point that they actually do need that surgical correction.
So, like, is it a direct result? Because when Coach Fox and I spoke about it, he's like, Nick, remember going, you know, here we were talking about our childhood, or it certainly his. He's you know, 20 years older than me even. But it's like, you played a sport in the season, right? Seasonal sports.
Yeah.
Well, I live in Wilmington, North Carolina, and every single sport is year-round down here now. I mean, up in New England, I'm sure I talk to people, it's every sport year-round. Is there a direct correlation with year-round play in singular sport, right, specialization to these injuries, you think?
Yeah, pitchsmart.org is a great resource for not just pitch counts, but highlighting a lot of these research studies. You know, in 2006, Olson headed up a group of researchers that looked at, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, months pitched per year was highly correlated. Showcase appearances were highly correlated. You know, pitching through fatigue, more than 100 innings pitched per year. Like, all these things massively increased, injury risk. And, you know, it comes back to, like, you know, beyond just the fact that they're competing more, they're practicing less. So what's kind of scary about it is not only are we seeing more injuries, like the quality of play is actually going down. Like, kids aren't practicing. They're getting off a flight, going out and throwing three innings as hard as they can. And then they're getting back on the plane. There's not really a whole lot of, like, crazy amount of teamwork in today's youth travel situation. It's really kind of sad the direction has come. And, you know, when these guys get to minor league baseball, a lot of times they have to take a step back and learn how to actually pitch, learn how to take care of themselves, learn how to compete, you know, field their position, all these different things. It's a very broken developmental model on the baseball side of things. But like you implied, there's parallels in a number of other different sports on the youth side now, too.
And that's the thing. So, like, it's not just a baseball thing, right? Overuse. If you're a parent, right, which you are three times over, how do you manage that, right? How do you manage the culture? I mean, like, for instance, with the info that you have, you being a professional in this space, how do you navigate it? Because I talked to David Epstein, right, author of Range and The Sports Gene, and he talks about this topic a lot. But he said it's almost like you have to be a parent that has to go rogue against the system.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate it, you know, with the knowledge that you have with your kids?
Yeah, and our oldest, we have twin 7-year-olds and a 3-year-old, so we're kind of just getting to the cusp of it, but it's fascinating. Our girls actually played softball for the first time. They played T-ball last year, and then this spring they actually played softball, which was kind of a combination of coach pitch, and then, you know, towards the end of the season, the kids start to pitch to each other, and it was really fascinating to me where, you know, you had these 6-7-year-old kids that were already doing travel ball. They're taking 4-hour bus rides across the state to go and participate, and, you know, they're better players now, but meanwhile, you know, our daughters are, you know, doing soccer, they're doing gymnastics, they're doing dance, like, they're involved in a wide variety of things. And, you know, kind of this early specialization, unfortunately, doesn't create a big foundation. But we realize that there are parents that don't necessarily appreciate that. They see that their kids might not be the best player now. And let's be real, nobody cares how good you are when you're 7. It's much more like where you're at when you're, you know, 17, 18, and, you know, on into college and all that stuff, if this is something that's going to be for you. So I think you have to be willing to buck the trend. And I think it's, you know, we have to keep having conversations like we're having right now. And one of the things that I do a lot in my work is I try to highlight guys that were multi-sport athletes. You know, like in my Yankees roles, like Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, those guys were pretty darn good multi-sport athletes in high school. Most of the stars on our Major League Baseball team were multi-sport athletes. You'd be surprised if you looked at the typical Major League roster, how many of them were actually late bloomers. Like, a big event for baseball is the Area Code Games. It takes place in California every August. Probably the top 220 high school juniors/seniors in the nation. And I remember doing a poll in our facility one day. We had like 42 big leaguers that came in that day. Only one of them actually participated at Area Codes. so many of these guys you see on TV were late bloomers who like got to college and discovered strength and conditioning or found a coach that was impactful for them or learned how to be an adult, something like that, that allowed them to take this big step forward. So I think when we look at it, like the big picture, we realize how many guys have been successful doing it with multi-sport approaches and, you know, taking a longer perspective and, you know, highlighting specific examples of like, this guy did it, this guy did it, this, you know, female did it. Like it can work. So I think it's, you know, on folks like us to keep having these conversations and pushing this important information to the forefront, because there's always someone that's trying to monetize a kid by getting to play year round.
That part right there, I really want to go with. I want to talk about the monetization point, but I follow your Twitter feed and, you know, you hear about all of these things and the word puberty, right? I mean, I've seen you talk about that and talk about how it's almost an advantage, right? We all have seen kids that were the biggest 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13 that may have gotten into puberty earlier. I was one of those kids who I was a catcher and all of a sudden the fields grew. And I didn't. I was the best player, one of the best players on the field when I'm 11, 12 years old. Then I'm playing on a, you know, it goes to 90-foot bases all of a sudden overnight. And I was like throwing three hoppers to second base. I couldn't reach. And I stuck with it and all that. But, you know, that waiting game, right? Then your neighbor or you hear someone on Twitter who's, you know, who's committing to XYZ program when they're in eighth grade, ninth grade. And, you know, I can't even reach second base. Keeping up with the Joneses, like that fear. Right, that fear. How do I manage that? Man, my parent, I love my kids. My kid's getting sad. How do you, because it's not just the physical thing, it's also the mental thing that comes into play there. How do you navigate all of that?
You know what I think you have to come back to is you have to really have an honest conversation with yourself and say, is my kid really going to make $200 million playing professional baseball? Like, is this the end? You know what I mean? Or am I trying to create a scenario where my son or daughter is going to foster a lifelong relationship that's healthy with physical activity? Are they going to have amazing relationships with their teammates? Are they going to have coaches that teach them to hold themselves to a higher standard and carry themselves in a professional way that's going to serve them, whether they're a baseball player or a accountant, lawyer, doctor, you know, whatever it is that they decide to do? I think those are the things that we have to ask ourselves. And the second you can take a step back and have that conversation and recognize that, you know, participation is about so much more than just winning games or getting better at the sport. It's about, you know, keeping kids healthy. It's about having, you know, enriching experiences, about fostering teamwork and, you know, and making sure that that's the same kid that's going to want to go play pickup hoops with his buddy when he's, you know, 43 years old and, you know, trying not to become overweight with a desk job. Like, those are the things that I think are vitally important for us to emphasize. And when you can take a step back like that, I think it makes a really, really big difference. Not a lot of people are able to do that. I completely understand it, particularly because we both know they're getting bombarded with marketing messages from sure. other people. That are pulling them the other direction because those people want to monetize their kids. And, you know, for me, I think multi-sport participation it's a gold mine for a number of reasons. One, obviously, you stand a much higher likelihood of staying healthy and nobody wants a kid that's stuck around, you know, at the house for 6 months with a growth plate fracture that's waiting for bone to heal. But I think on top of that, you're rolling with different social circles. You're meeting different people. Like, you know, as parents, we meet other parents, you know, just like you meet, you know, new parents when your kids go to a new school or anything like that. It's just so enriching, I think, for a number of different things beyond just, you know, the physical emphasis. And the truth is, though, like, and I did a lengthy, like, kind of podcast on this, is, like, early sports specialization largely doesn't work. Like, that's the thing that's missed in all this stuff. It's a fundamentally ineffective approach. We actually have, you know, research to support it. So I think it's really, really important for parents to kind of, like, dig on that because the research actually has been done.
You know, you're, if I'm not mistaken, you were, like, a professional power lifter. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, I got into it. It was kind of my way to stay competitive after I was actually a soccer and tennis player for the most part in my high school career. But in grad school, I got pretty heavily involved in powerlifting. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were throwing around 405. You were squatting like 850. I mean, you're an animal, right? So now you turn on social media and it's like, get big, get strong, which I get, right? There's definitely. Yeah. I would love to flip the script on you here and talk about what's a proper age to start really incorporating the weights. And also, nutrition plays an massive role, right, when we feed our bodies. When should we start incorporating, you know, the right diet, right nutrition, while still being a kid, right? What are the ways to balance weight training and diet and what ages?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll tell you, this is kind of how I lead into this discussion, is, you know, a lot of people are always freaked out about, like, hey, is strength training going to stunt my kid's growth, right? And the way I answer it is, do you know that the typical collarbone actually doesn't become skeletally mature in most people until about age 25? right? So you don't ever see anybody walking through like the Alabama or the LSU weight room, like contraindicating bench pressing and 22-year-old senior football players, right? Those guys are not stunting growth. They're already behemoths. So this concept of, you know, strength training stunting growth is actually, you know, particularly when it's age-appropriate strength training, it's a wise tale. And actually, Dr. Avery Fagenbaum at the College of New Jersey is kind of the premier guy with respect to research and all this. And he's published some wonderful stuff that just talks about how strength training, when incorporated correctly, can really make a big difference for kids, particularly as they go through like an adolescent growth spurt, you know, kind of has a grounding effect where they don't hit kind of like that newborn horse stage where the bones stretch out faster than the muscles and tendons. You know, it helps them to control their center of mass and things like that. So when people ask me what's the right age to get going, and I say it's when your son or daughter is excited about it. Like my wife and I will go to the gym and our girls will come with us and they'll build forts, they'll do obstacle courses, they'll swing from the TRX, they'll hang from the pull-up bar, they'll pull each other on the sleds. Like they're very creative. Like my daughter Lydia, like she's our little like kind of type A one, who loves to like have direction, and she's a rule follower. Like she'll actually try to follow my wife's entire program to the gym. Like she'll go grab the lightest kettlebell and she'll do her deadlifts. And it's all her idea. And I think that's the secret. It ends miserably if you try to force it on an 11-year-old. But if an 11-year-old is really excited about doing chin-ups or something like that, by all means, you should encourage it. Because what you're doing is you're kind of, you're setting the stage for a favorable relationship with exercise over the long term. What we've typically done at our facility is we run a foundations program, which is something that we'll do typically for kind of 8 to 11-year-olds that get really excited about it. Historically, they're like the younger brothers and sisters of our you know, high school athletes, or even like kids of some of our professional athletes and things like that. They're intrigued what their older brother or their mom and dad are doing. So we'll integrate that. And then usually from like kind of 12 on, we'll get kids more integrated on like kind of like a true, you know, individualized program, more in line with what we see in an assessment and all that. And obviously that coincides with kind of, you know, adolescent growth spurt, things along those lines. So we, at that age, it's usually like twice a week, full body. You know, it's not just strength training. It's also, you know, throwing med balls, working on change of direction mechanics, teaching them how to sprint a little bit. You know, there's competencies to that, just like you would get with, you know, learning how to field a ground ball or how to serve in volleyball or, you know, how to do layups in basketball, all that stuff. It's competency driven. And then usually once we get a little bit further along, we'll ramp it up to 3 days a week for those athletes. You know, and then usually around age 17, some of those athletes get a little bit more involved with like something that's like a 6 day a week, you know, really involved program that we might use with our college or our professional athletes. So you just kind of nurture, you know, that relationship with exercise, and over the course of time, you build it out and make it a little bit more progressive. And above all else, you want to make the gym fun. You want to make it a place that's, you know, kind of like a sanctuary for kids. You know, there's home, there's school, and then there's the gym. And we want to be that third place.
When we come back, Eric and I discuss why athletes who learn to fail as children are often easier to coach at the professional level.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Where we left off, Eric and I were about to talk about the importance of eating high-quality foods and why failure at a young age is a critical component of long-term development.
What about like nutrition? Like that, I mean, getting your kids to not eat. You know, my wife is definitely better at it than me. I'd give my kids cereal, you know, just to get them to be quiet because I got all these boys running around. They're out of their minds. So, like, how do you work with it? More importantly, I think we all, most of us know the answer, but it's like, you know, how important is it to take in quality food for performance, right? Like, how much does that impact? And can you speak on, more importantly, how to do that with kids at younger ages?
Yeah, kids are tough. And I'll be the first to admit that we haven't mastered this because we have three kids and one of ours is an extremely picky eater. She wants what she wants when she wants it. And, you know, to some degree, you're playing for the tie at times, right? You try to make, you know, the meals very, very healthy. And knowing that often in kids' worlds, the snacks are where, you know, some of the foods that are a little bit more convenience-based and things like that aren't quite as healthy. So for us, like, there's a fruit and a vegetable, you know, always at, you know, lunch and dinner. Like, that's non-negotiable. Obviously, there's a protein that goes with it as well. And then there's always some kind of fruit with breakfast. And, you know, they might have toast. They might have, you know, there's certain cereals that we will allow them to have. They drink, you know, they drink whole milk with, like, the DHA fortified and all that stuff. So, I think the biggest thing that we do, though, is we try to model healthy behavior. Like, there's not a lot of junk food in the house. Like, my wife and I, you know, always eat our vegetables. Like, we keep a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables in the house. You know, we always emphasize, like, quality proteins at every meal. So, I think that's the stuff that, you know, I'm kind of a firm believer that more is caught than taught. Sometimes you're not necessarily going to change the person, but what you do is you change the situation. And honestly, that's not a whole lot different than what we do with professional athletes. If you really think about it, like, they're professional athletes that have sweet tooths. And really, success a lot of times with dealing with those demographics is closing the gap between what you know and what you can implement. It's kind of like a Mike Boyle quote from years ago is, if you think about Major League Baseball, you know, we know that nicotine is not really good for you. We know that alcohol probably isn't great for you as an athlete, but we still have Major League Baseball players that, you know, that dip. We have Major League Baseball players that, you know, that probably drink more than they should, and it's not conducive to a healthy career. But what can we do to make it harder for them? Like, is it just as simple as providing information and saying, hey, you know, this could give you throat cancer? Or do we get those things out of the clubhouse so that if a player wants, you know, that or sugar or, you know, kitty cereal, whatever it is, that they have to work harder to get it. You know, they've got to call a buddy to get it for them, or, you know, maybe they've got to, you know, ask a, you know, a private chef to cook it for them at home before they come to the stadium. Those are the kind of the discussions that we have. It's very, very hard to change people, but I think it's much easier to change situations in which those people operate.
That's a great point, man. And, you know, to kind of bring it back a little bit, and I know this is something you're passionate about. I listen to your content, and also I read a ton of it, as I mentioned before. And, you know, you just mentioned right there, like, you know, the make it more challenging, right? To make it a little bit more. And I think that's something we're missing out on today in our youth is the ability to allow our kids the opportunity to struggle, to fail, to be creative. And I love how you brought that up. You know, we're talking about going to the gym and, you know, your daughters are finding ways to kind of be creative with themselves, not having you hover over them, right? The helicopter or lawnmower type parent. You know, what's the benefit of, and I ask this question a lot, but I think it's important. And I think it's important to get the discussion going and get people's minds going, is why is it so important to let the kids struggle? And more importantly, you know, not mow down every even though we can see the obstacle coming. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, let them go through it. Trust that, hey, they're going to be all right. And in the long term, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you think about it, you know, biologically, kids have learned to walk without their parents for generations, right? It's a complex assortment of, you know, things that need to be organized in order for that to happen, right? We have, you know, certain sensitivity zones and points of contact with the ground that, you know, kids, they figure it out without us. And we think that we need to do things for them. And sometimes the best thing you do is step back. And, you know, one of the things that I look at in my, like, coaching responsibility is that my number one job is to set athletes up for scenarios where they can fail without consequences. I mean, that's what training is really all about, right? And fail safely, you know, is the key point out of that. And you're not going to put 500 pounds on their back and hope it works out when they go to squat. Like, that's not what we do. But, you know, a lot of what we do in an athletic realm, that's how we learn. So I always emphasize that the success is in the struggle. We've got to, you know, make sure that we give kids an opportunity to fail, because they're going to get it eventually, right? Mike Trout's the best baseball player on the planet. He still fails. You know what I mean? Aaron Judge fails. You know, we have, you know, elite Cy Young caliber starting pitchers that go out and give up 8 spots in the first inning once a year. Everybody has a clunker. And if you haven't failed at younger levels when it matters less, it's going to be catastrophic when you fail at much higher levels. And I actually think that's the hardest high level athlete to coach is, you know, someone who's never struggled, who's, you know, had smooth sailing all the way through. We actually see it a lot in high school draft picks in Major League Baseball. I think it's one of the reasons why college draft picks seem to have higher success rates is a lot of these high school kids can just mow down competition. You know, in high school, if you throw 93, you just throw fastballs by everybody. And then you get to pro ball and you're facing, you know, kids that have consistently hit against 95 plus miles an hour, and guys that will lead secondary offerings. And all of a sudden that fastball just gets, you know, hit back at you even harder than you threw it. And they don't know how to handle that struggle. And it's why you'll see mental skills departments and things like that that are so built out in professional organizations, because we have to teach people how to, you know, thrive in spite of the fact that they're involved in sports where failure is everywhere and it happens every single day.
I know that your time is very valuable. I can't thank enough. You get my brain going, man, and I love, you know, your energy, your passion, your expertise. People are going to want to find out more about you, your content. I know you're authored. You've written a ton of content. Where can they find you? What's the best place they can come and find your research?
Yeah, for sure. My website's kind of my hub for everything. It's ericcressy.com. And in particular, I would, in light of the conversation we've had, I direct into my podcast. That's a lot of conversations certainly in the baseball community, interviews with, you know, pro guys and folks from the coaching world and all that stuff. And in particular, my episode 75 is titled "Does Early Sports Specialization Work?" It's about a 30-minute episode. It's a relatively quick, kind of listen, but it highlights literally all the research that we have, particularly with respect to baseball and how early specialization plays out. It actually looks a lot at Latin American players where specialization is, you know, astronomically higher because it's really the only opportunity they have. So that would be a good one to check out, ericcressy.com. And then on social media, it's at ericcressy for both Twitter and Instagram.
Dude, I can't thank you enough for coming on, sharing your wisdom. We're going to have to do this again, but truly appreciate your work. And man, I just can't thank you enough for sharing with us, man.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Eric Cressy, Director of Player Health and Performance for the New York Yankees. Thanks for listening to the Reform Sports Project podcast. I'm Nick Bonacore, and our goal is to restore a healthy balance and perspective in all areas of sport through education and advocacy. For updates, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or check out our website by searching for the Reform Sports Project.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.